This is Radio Boston. I'm Tiziana Deering. We start the day today with our next installment of Here's to You 2022. Our aspiration to look ahead at the year in Congress, the power of Massachusetts politics in Washington, and one of Massachusetts Congressman Jim McGovern's core issues, hunger. But as is the case with so much of this first week of January, we can't move ahead yet because we are still confronting the sicknesses and the injuries of 2021, and that includes tomorrow's one-year anniversary of the January 6th insurrection. So we will begin there. And Congressman Jim McGovern joins us on the line now. He represents the 2nd District, which includes Worcester. Congressman, how are you?
I'm doing fine, Tiziana. Thanks for having me.
I appreciate you joining us. I'd like to start, Congressman, by reading you a little bit of a piece you published in the Boston Globe this week. You wrote there, reflecting on the events of January 6th, just a little bit here, quote, "Make no mistake, an aspiring dictator, egged on by his allies in Congress, failed to hold on to power this time. But those very same people haven't given up. They are analyzing their failures and will continue their brazen attempts to seize power by any means necessary. This is not some academic debate. In future elections, they might succeed in the unthinkable," end quote. When I read your piece, Congressman, I thought, wow, he is mad. Are you mad?
I am mad. I'm mad because the big lie that was the basis for the January 6th attack continues to thrive and continues to be given oxygen by many of my colleagues who I serve with here in the Congress. Look, our democracy in America is not a guarantee, and we could lose it. And what I fear is that a growing movement of Americans, including some of my colleagues, are contemptuous of democracy and would prefer to resort to violence or other means just to be able to gain power. And I remind people all the time that we call America an experiment because there's no definite outcome. And the experiment is whether or not it's possible for people to govern themselves. And there is nothing that guarantees that we succeed. So it's up to each of us to preserve the republic. And I think this is a moment where people have to mobilize and fight against what I call an ongoing coup. So what these guys were unable to succeed at on January 6th, which was basically to undermine the will of the people in the election, they're trying to do with bills and initiatives at the state and local level to politicize our elections and to suppress the vote. And
so I want to
stop it. We have to mobilize.
So I want to ask you about that. I mean, there's so many pieces in there I'd like to dive into. It's been on my mind a lot that you also talk in your piece about really having trouble even being on the elevator in the Capitol with some of the other members of Congress who, as you say, quote, unapologetic in their embrace of the lies that led to violent extremism. And you just talked about anti-democratic. Do you believe that the colleagues you disagree with in the House actually are anti-democratic? Would they see themselves as being against democracy? How do we think about that?
So I think there are two categories. There are some who I think absolutely do. I think they think democracy is a lot of work, that it's messy, and they don't like it. And by the way, they know that the majority of the American people are not with them on much of what they're trying to do. And then is the second category of people, which is particularly frustrating, of those who go along to get along, who somehow think that it's politically advantageous to either look the other way or to just, pay lip service to the big lie. And so when I mentioned in that op-ed piece that there are some people that I can't stand getting in an elevator with, I meant it. I was the last person off the House floor on January 6th. I came face to face with this angry group of rioters or terrorists, whatever you want to call them. 140 Capitol Police officers were injured that day. People died. They destroyed the parts of the Capitol building, and they tried to undermine the election. So when people are trying to downplay it or make believe it didn't happen, it really ticks me off. I mean, I have no patience for that. And I think that, and I'm hoping that a lot of people in this country will have no patience for that as well.
you know, I'm thinking about the commission, the made up of 7 Democrats, 2 Republicans, select committee to investigate the January 6th attack. I have a couple questions for you there. You are a vocal proponent of it with 7 Democrats, 2 Republicans, and those 2 Republicans now pariahs in their own party. Can they be effective?
Well, yes, they can be effective, and every member of that committee is being effective. For the last several months, they have been interviewing hundreds and hundreds of individuals with firsthand information of all things related to January 6th, including people who were in the room with Donald Trump during that day, and they're gathering information about what led to that violent insurrection. And I think we're going to now see them move to a more public platform of doing public hearings so that everybody can see what they already know. And we will make, they will make the case as to what happened and recommendations about making people accountable. But it is important that the truth be established. And it is important that people who are involved in trying to essentially undermine the will of the American people held to account. So I do have confidence in them. And I give it, by the way, Liz Cheney and Adam Kinzinger, the 2 Republicans. I've served with Liz on the Rules Committee over the years. We don't agree on much in terms of a lot of different things, but I admire her guts and her commitment and her allegiance to this democracy and her patriotism and her love of this country. She's putting it all on the line to do what she believes is right and what I believe is right. And I think she deserves credit for that.
So here's a question that I'm wrestling with. I'm thinking about this conversation today, and I hear you. The sort of higher order importance of preserving our democracy, that is first principles kind of stuff. And then, Congressman, I think about the hour we spent on Radio Boston yesterday, where almost the entire thing was on COVID, people not being able to get tests, you know, people worried about vaccines not working, people worried about being sick and not being able to work, what it's going to do to our economy, businesses. And I'm aware that this pursuit in Congress of the truth is, I don't know, furthering divisions, but certainly not helping divisions in Congress. And there's work to be done on these bread and butter kitchen table issues. How do you think about that, especially if the higher order stuff puts a spanner in the works on the everyday stuff?
Well, let's be clear. The problem, you know, with getting a lot of this other stuff done has nothing to do with us pursuing the truth on January 6th. It has everything to do with some of the extremists that are being elected on the right. People like Marjorie Taylor Greene or Lauren Boebert or Paul Gosar, they don't give a damn about helping people. They don't care about moving anything forward. They're interested in blowing things up. They're interested in getting Twitter followers. So, you know, whether or not we pursue the truth on January 6th or not doesn't impact their willingness to cooperate. And by the way, that lunatic fringe on the, in the Republican side is basically controlling the leadership of the Republican Party here in the House. But we're going to have to walk and chew gum at the same time.
I'm going to stop you there. And I'm not playing politics here, but I do want to ask you, because leadership is Kevin McCarthy. Are you saying he's a part of the lunatic fringe? Or are you saying that people that you consider that have undue sway on leadership?
Yeah, I think people who I consider that have undue sway on the leadership. Look, Kevin McCarthy, and I've said this before, has demonstrated he's spineless. I mean, he can't bring himself to condemn some of the most outrageous behavior and statements by those on the far right, in part because I think he thinks that his political fortunes rest with them liking him, them thinking that he's one of them. And so I don't give him a pass on anything. I'm disgusted at what he's willing to tolerate, even when it comes to January 6th. I mean, that day he called Donald Trump, asking Donald Trump to say something to stop the violence because he saw what was going on. And then, you know, a few 48 hours later, you know, after Trump threatened his potential speakership or his leadership position, he's all of a sudden, you know, downplaying what happened. I mean, members of his colleagues, his staff, the people who work here were all threatened that day, not to mention you know, our system of government. And, you know, and he has spent all of his time trying to undermine even the formation of a committee to investigate January 6th. So I have absolutely no respect for Kevin McCarthy. He is not a leader by any means. A real leader and a real Republican leader would be demanding the truth. Instead, what he has done is he has basically said that the basis for the Republican Party, the basis for their politics, is a lie, a big lie. And I think that that's unconscionable.
I do want to look ahead to 2022, and I will pivot us in a moment. But I, in listening to you, and you know, I asked you at the beginning if you're mad, and you said, I'm mad. And you're always so frank with me when we talk. What will it take for you to feel like you've healed from what happened to you and the country a year ago tomorrow?
Well, look, I think you can't move on unless there's truth and accountability. And so the truth has to come out. And there has to be some sort of accountability. We have to figure out what that is, and demand it, you know, as it is appropriate. But there has to be a moment of truth here, and I think we will get there. But it is a lot harder than it should be, because we have people who are working ferociously to try to find ways to, you know, to drag the clock out. So, they're hoping that maybe they might have some luck in the midterm elections and then they could just squash this whole thing once and for all. But, you know, it's hard to move on unless there's truth and unless there's accountability. And so I'm mad not because of I was there, not because of I felt threatened. I'm mad because I love this country. And I think there's a group of people out there that are trying to destroy it. And I don't care whether you're a liberal like me or a conservative or, you know, you're a moderate or whatever, or a Democrat, Republican, we all should care about protecting our democratic institutions. Because if not, people are going to lose their voice. And I get it, democracy's messy, but it's worth fighting for. And I'm hoping that there will be a massive mobilization this year and an insistence that we move forward on protecting our democracy by passing a voting rights bill, even if that means getting rid of the filibuster or amending the filibuster. And that we vigorously launch court challenges against voter repression laws that have already been instituted in many of the states of this country.
So you've just started to pick up the thread of looking ahead, and I want to go with you there. I'm just going to tell our listeners that tomorrow we're going to spend the whole hour marking the one-year anniversary of the insurrection and unpacking what it means for us as neighbors, as a community, state, and country. We'll have Massachusetts Congressman Seth Moulton. We'll have David Gergen, former U.S. Attorney Andrew Lelling, and Joan Donovan, an expert on online extremism. So that'll be tomorrow. So, Congressman, one of the things that we have talked about extensively in the past, and part of what we wanted to talk with you about today, is your focus on hunger. And I do want to ask you, we've seen hunger rise during the pandemic. Last time we spoke with you was after a Project Bread report that found that household food insecurity in Massachusetts increased to almost 20% of households during the pandemic. Do you have bandwidth this year to focus on hunger? How are you going to do that? What are your priorities for those who are food insecure in 2022?
So one of the things that we need to do in the immediate term is we need to find ways to extend the child tax credit, which has helped a lot of families be able to put food on the table for their kids. Unfortunately, that has expired as part of the Build Back Better agenda. My hope is that we can convince
the expanded child tax credit is expired, right?
Right. Yeah. And my hope is that that we can convince them to at least allow the Senate to have a vote on it, so that we can, you know, extend that benefit. But there's some things like that we need to do in the short term. In the long term, we need to figure out a solution to our hunger problem. And the solution is not, simply relying on our food banks and our food pantries and our charitable organizations. We need systemic change. We need to understand that to solve hunger, it's not just, you know, and it includes everything from housing to fair wages to health care to you name it, our school systems. All those things matter. We need to have a more holistic discussion to connect all the dots, which is one of the reasons why I'm in discussions now with the Biden administration to get them to do a White House conference on food, nutrition, health, and hunger. The last time we ever did a conference, anything similar to that, was 52 years ago. And that conference, as imperfect as it was, actually produced WIC, the Women's, Infants, and Children's Program. Mm. It produced efforts to focus on child nutrition, as well as improvements in our then food stamp program, now the SNAP program. So we need that kind of all-of-government approach in which we bring everybody in this country who may have a role to play in solving this to the table, and we come up with a holistic plan. And my hope is that we will get President Biden to ultimately say yes. Again, we've been in discussions for months. And in the meantime, as chairman of the Rules Committee, we've been, you know, doing hearings on this issue and field hearings and site visits all over the country, highlighting what works, what doesn't work, and what are the challenges. But this is a solvable problem. And I've said this on your show before. I'll say it again. Hunger, when all is said and done, is a political condition. And by that, I mean we have the resources, the money, the food. We have everything we need, but we don't have the political will. My hope is that we could develop that this year.
To that question, last question there, you have been calling on for this conference for a while. You said you're in ongoing conversations with the Biden administration, the White House. Have you seen movement from them? Do you have real reason to think they're going to get on board, you're going to be able to do this conference in 2022?
That is my hope. I mean, I've had conversation with the president. I've talked to his chief of staff. I have had a long conversation with Dr. Susan Rice, Ambassador Susan Rice, on this matter, who oversees a lot of his domestic policies. We have, on the staff level, a continuing conversation with all the relevant people in the various agencies about what it would look like. I will be honest with you, I'm a little bit frustrated that it's taken so long to get to yes, and here's the date. But I am confident that we will get this done. And it may be that we have to do it in two parts, maybe one part this year and a continuation, you know, the year next year. But I am, you know, this is the way you solve the problem. I think we're all tired of managing hunger. I think we need to figure out how to solve it. You know, and again, we have to overcome some of the stereotypes out there. We've talked about this on your show before. I mean, I have people, and when I'm on talk radio, people say, oh, the answer is everybody should get a job. And I remind people that the majority of people right now who are on SNAP who can work actually do work. They earn so little, they still qualify for the benefit. But there are other challenges, too. Access to food and the quality of food that people have access to is important as well. We have to start thinking about making sure people have access to good, nutritious food, because that relates to health care. And if you want to control health care costs, then we want to make sure people have access to good, nutritious food. So all of this is connected. And I think a conference like this could actually bring it all together and give us a plan forward where we can see a light at the end of the tunnel.
All right, Massachusetts Congressman Jim McGovern, who represents the 2nd District, which includes Worcester. Thank you. Will you come back and talk with us about hunger more as the year goes on?
I would love to. And thank you, and be safe.